Monday, everybody. This is Fantasy Sports Today inside the Fantasy Sports Network studio. Chris Meany, Ashley Docking here with you. We're soon going to be joined by Joe Pizzapia of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Yes.
Sports Radio Network. I should really know that. I'm probably going to get fired for stumbling on that one. Anyway, Joe's going to talk to us about the new book that he just released on Amazon, and it launched at number one. So we're going to get into that with him.
For the 10th time.
It's a great accomplishment, and we're very, very proud of him for that. And then Chris is going to do his rankings, but this time we're going starting pitchers 1 to 10 and just talk about some guys in some new locations and also a little bit of a trend. Are you targeting the NL over the AL? We're going to
No, I'm not going to.
It's a tease. We're going to get into that in just a little while. But first, Chris, let's talk about the AFC Championship game that's set up. Steelers taking on the Patriots.
Yeah, I don't know, Ashley. This is exactly what I wanted to see. I know a lot of people are upset in the office. Nobody wants to see Tom Brady win another Super Bowl. People are saying they don't want to see KC in the playoffs and the postseason, you know, go deep and the ratings will be bad. I don't care about any of that stuff. In my opinion, as a football fan, and I'm not a fan of any of these four teams because my team sucks, is that I want to see Tom Brady go up against Big Ben. And we'll get into the other matchup. That's exactly what I want to see too. So this is going to be great. You got two experienced quarterbacks. If you look at the last 10 years, I mean, it's Brady or Ben or Aaron Rodgers, a little Manning. We know he's not around. This is what it's been for the past 10 years. So I didn't watch much of that Steelers game or the Pats game. It was a little bit boring, in my opinion. This game, I feel like everyone is going to be glued. You got Tom Brady there going for another Super Bowl ring. I mean, Blunt wasn't great, but it was Lewis. It's just somebody else in that offense that always steps up. And then, you know, even on the other side, here we go, Big Ben. They moved the ball just fine at Kansas City. They struggled in the red zone all game
long. Which they knew was going to be a problem.
Yeah, because once they got there, I mean, it was 5 field goals, the missed field goal, the turnover. I mean, they moved the ball at ease yesterday against Kansas City, but they struggled when they got there in the red zone, and it almost bit them at the very end, not getting those touchdowns. But this is what I want to see. I don't know how you feel, Ashley, but Big Ben and Tom Brady,
no one wants to see a game where the only scoring is 6 field goals. It's a postseason record, by the way. Congratulations to the Patriots. Yeah. But the thing is that it's going to be very interesting because you mentioned Deion Lewis. He created history in his last game against Houston. He ran a touchdown back off a kickoff. He had a receiving touchdown and a rushing touchdown, I believe, as well.
Ways.
But the Steelers' defense, we talked about it last week, has been sneaky good against the run, taking on Jay Ajayi in their wild card game. He only rushed for 33 yards, I believe it was. And then against KC, Spencer Ware and Tyreek Hill combined for 53 yards. So it really is, to me, going to be on Tom Brady to take this game to the next level and really make sure that the Patriots are successful. And for those who don't want to see Tom Brady be successful again, why not? You're such a hater. Because why would you not
like the LeBron James effect, right?
Witness greatness while you can. Exactly. You have LeBron James, you have Tom Brady. They're two of the best players to play their respective sports in all of the history of those sports and of those franchises. So why would you not want to witness that? I think that Tom Brady is going to make sure that they win this game. And I think just another funny thing, did you see the post-game speech from Mike Tomlin?
No.
So Mike Tomlin gives a post-game speech to the Steelers after they win against KC, and he's like, hey, we don't want them to see us coming. Keep a low profile. Stay off social media. Focus on the game. We spotted them a day and a half because, of course, the game was moved from 105 to 8:20. Guess who live streamed it? Antonio Brown, obviously. He's telling you to keep a low profile, stay off social media, and we find out through live streaming on social media, so I just thought that was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. And this is, like, again, and this is what I want to see. I mean, it's too bad Gronk's not there, but Brady has enough weapons, and you know what, the Killer Bees, we hadn't seen them really all year long be together as a team, and it was the first time last week in the postseason where all three, Bell, Brown, and Ben, were able to play in a game, and they did it again yesterday. It's fun to watch. It's great football. That's exactly what I want to see. There's no disrespect to Kansas City. They were in that game too. They had a chance at the end to win. It was a tough call at the end. It was the right call, but I want to see Big Ben and company as opposed to, you know, Alex Smith and Travis Kelce shoving guys. Did you see that?
I did.
That
guy? You're not a big fan of Travis Kelce.
I just don't.
The official after.
There's just no need of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Houston game against the Patriots was not exciting, Chris. You didn't like it, but there's no way that you can argue that the Packers-Cowboys game was not just as exciting as everyone had anticipated it would be, maybe even a little bit more so, because early on it looked like the Packers were going to run away with it. They built up an 18-point lead.
Then looked over. Dak People Prescott, are calling for Tony Romo.
Yeah, exactly. After the first half, bring in Tony Romo. But Dak Prescott and the rest of his team, Ezekiel Elliott, Dez Bryant, they scored 15 unanswered points. They will now play the Falcons in the NFC Championship. And both teams dealing with significant injuries from star players. Julio Jones, we know his toe's been injured. That's something that's been happening all season. How much it will hinder him, I guess we'll find out soon enough. But Jordy Nelson, a little bit more severe. He has broken ribs, and he said he's going to try and play. But his first priority is trying to breathe normally. And so that seems something that could be a bit of a concern.
I mean, I just don't feel like I just don't know how he can play in this football game. I just really don't know how he can play. And we'll hear news as the days go on, and I'm sure we'll hear about Julio. He's going to play. You're right, Ashley. That was one of the best football games I think I've ever seen between Green Bay and Dallas, and it looked like it was just going to be a rout. And for Dak, I got to give him some credit. I was a big believer in how maybe, you know, at halftime, if he hadn't really done anything and it was looking that way, like he wasn't going to until he hooked up with Dez the first time, that they should have went Romo, because Dak looked nervous. He did. He looked like a rookie quarterback going up against a veteran in Aaron Rodgers who was just rolling in the first half, and they couldn't be stopped. And Dak made some throws that were way off in the first couple drives. But I give him some credit. He hooked up with Dez. He made some plays. He ran that in on the two-point combo. He took the hit. So I give him some credit. It was just a phenomenal game. And, like, how nice has Aaron Rodgers been? Like, another just not Hail Mary, but another play at the end where he really was like a Hail Mary play. And Cook, who gets a lot of flack on this network for not being a good football player, caught the ball on the sidelines and kept his feet in. Aaron Rodgers and now Matt Ryan going toe-to-toe. And honestly, it really doesn't get better than that. You got four wicked quarterbacks and great offenses. It's going to be a fun weekend to watch football.
Aaron Rodgers has been very, very good, very precise. The whole team only has two turnovers since November 20th. But keep in mind that the Falcons score over 35 points per game at home. Yeah. And they have Coleman as their pass catching back. And so that dynamic backfield with Freeman and Coleman presents a challenge for anyone. Let's just switch gears a little bit and talk some NBA, because Steven Adams went down with a concussion. He was, I guess, rummaging under the basket with DeMarcus Cousins, ended up falling, smoking the back of his head. He has concussion, and it's Cantor, double-double, 29 points, 12 assists in Adams' absence. They're taking on the Clippers tonight, OKC is, and this is a team that Cantor has had a lot of success against this season in three games.
Yeah, I think we give Cantor a bit of a hard time earlier in the year about how he's really inconsistent, but if you look at his last 10 to 15 games, you see the season high in points, but he's been great. You mentioned the double-double that he had yesterday, and just double-doubles in like five of his last seven games, I believe.
12 on the season,
12 on the season, so he's been fine. I know a lot of people dropped him earlier in the year, and I was an owner, and I was a little bit fed up with him too, but he's trending in the right direction, and Adams is not trending in that direction. He's trending the opposite way. Even before that concussion, the game before that, he was like 5-4, some mediocre play from him, so good if you're a Cantor owner. But for Adams, I mean, you don't drop him. You just figure it out and see what's going to happen with him. And DFS, if, you know, there's no Adams tonight, and Cantor, as you mentioned, success against the Clippers, you need to roll with him tonight.
Roll out Cantor.
It seems like it'd be a good play.
What about Malcolm Delaney? How do you feel about rolling him out? Because Atlanta has been a really interesting case this year. At first, they were shopping Paul Millsap. They were just cleaning house, rebuilding, as people love to say in the NBA. But then they went on this win streak, and things kind of got interesting. Sucks for Dennis Schroeder, because they traded out Jeff Teague, and he thought he was going to be the number one, and he was vocal about thinking that he was supposed to be a starting point guard in this league, and now Delaney comes in, and he's been fabulous over the last five or six games, at least for the month of January. He's played less than 20 minutes just one time and seems to be carving out a real niche for himself.
The assists. We talk so much, Ashley, about how assists are so hard to come by, especially off the waiver wire, but this guy in the last couple games, you see the career-high 9 assists. Before that, 6 assists, 8 assists, 7 assists. He's had some nice games with assists, and I don't think that he's a must-add in a 12-team team. I'm 12-team league. I'm looking there, and it's like, who are you going to drop off your roster? But in DFS, he's a cheap play. It's just like, it's the points, some inconsistency in a little bit of his game, only playing 25, 26, 27 minutes a night. That's hard to just pick off the waiver wire, but he's another guy who's trending in the right direction. As for Schroeder, he's a great ball player, but a little bit of an attitude problem so far we've seen from him in the first couple of years, and who knows if he's really ready for that full role of a starting point guard with 40 minutes plus time. The turnovers are an issue with him. So, I mean, if you need some assists, grab him.
Grab Delaney,
yeah. But in DFS, play him because he's getting it done and he's cheap.
We want all the Delaney. All the Delaney stocks. Delaney. You got to buy him while they're still low. And then just a quick note, Chris Letang has moved to the IR. He's dealing with a knee injury. We'll be back on FST. Joe Pisapia joins us. He's going to talk about his fantasy black book. If you haven't had the opportunity to check out the Fantasy Sports Radio Network yet, make sure you go ahead and download that app. You can find it on our Twitter page because there is some great content being produced, and one of the main contributors, Mr. Joe Pisapia, is going to join us now to not only talk about his very successful Fantasy Black Book series, but also to talk about some draft targets for this upcoming Major League Baseball season. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. How are you? Nice to be back.
Joe, we won't get into football, but I know you enjoyed that Packers and Cowboys game last night. It was great to watch. But let's get into the book and some targets that you're talking about. Congratulations, by the way. Debuted at number one for the 10th time.
Thank you.
On Amazon in fantasy sports. That's fantastic. It always a great read, Joe. And for those who have yet to, you know, have the privilege to read this book, I mean, what can you tell people? What could they expect if they haven't, you know, got this book? And they should definitely get it.
Well, I appreciate that, first of all. And I think the fact that it went to number one that very first year that I did it was really just, it's sort of that idea that, you know, if you put something out there that's unique and useful, that people will find it. I had no major entities behind me at the time when I put the first one out. So the fact that it went to number one, first shot out of the gate, and then people kept coming back and it kept growing every year, really speaks to the success that folks have had. And I think that that's huge. And it is different. Relative position value is a very different way of looking at the board. It's understanding that projections aren't everything. It's about understanding a player's value, how much that player is better than the guy above him, below him, and basically understanding how to be flexible within different formats and different leagues. There's nothing worse than so many of these magazines and draft guides you get where it's just these rankings, and that doesn't really help anybody. I want to know how much better is player X than player Y, and I want to know how much better they're going to be than, let's say, the players that are below fantasy league average. And understanding that and understanding the relative position value theory will change how you play any fantasy sport for the rest of your life.
Okay, we're just going to scratch out our plans to talk about Chris's rankings later on in the show.
Well, we can talk about them, but I can quantify them. See, that's the difference.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned knowing the value of someone is very, very important. And news broke today that it's Jose Bautista who looks like he's going to be headed back to Toronto after maybe overestimating his value in the open market. Ken Rosenthal reported that it's looking that he's going to sign a two-year deal worth between $35 and $40 million. I want to know, after an injury-plagued 2016 season, what kind of value do you think Jose Bautista still holds?
Well, first of all, guys, if I ever turn in a $100 million contract, please just come slap me in the face, okay?
No,
don't ever let me do that, ever. But Bautista is a guy that, you know, the batting average is trending in the wrong direction the last 3 years. Also, you know, he wasn't that great at home, which is a place where he should be great. The OPS was under 800. The batting average was quite low. So there's a lot of things going in the wrong direction for Bautista. And he's been a terrific player for a very long time for them. I think this is a good signing. I think they need him in Toronto. I don't think Morales is enough protection around Josh Donaldson. So I think it's good for his value. In terms of fantasy value, I think this is a guy that you're still looking for the home runs, maybe an on-base percentage league. You hope he gets a little bit of a bump there, but in batting average and stuff like that, he's going to weigh you down, and not to mention the injuries the last few years have also been a negative.
Mm-hmm. You know, you touched on value. It's such a key thing, and you know, Joe, every single year, there's always one player that, you know, gets reached on in drafts, and it's usually a young player. Last year, Carlos Correa certainly didn't return value of going 5th, 6th, 7th overall in drafts. Doing a mock draft with Trey Turner, went 13th overall over the weekend. I mean, I'm not doubting his skill. I know he's got a tremendous skill, speed, average. It all showed in a small sample size, but this is a guy in over 1,100 plate appearances in the minors, hit 19 home runs, 13 last year in 324 plate appearances. Do you think he's worth it, or is he going to be on any of your teams? Is this going way too early for you?
If he's going there, I can tell you he won't be on any of my teams. And there's this thing that happens every year in fantasy. You get the sexy new toy, and everybody wants to take the small sample size and extrapolate it over a full season. And that is not sound fantasy baseball. That's not sound fantasy sports to do that in general. A lot of Turner's production also came in September. We had 8 home runs and OPS well over 900. And that's a situation where you're facing a lot of AAA pitching, a lot of middle relievers. So for me, that is not stat worthy that you can take those numbers and project and say, oh, this is a 30 guy. He's not. Maybe he's a 15 to 20 guy in terms of home runs. The speed is certainly for real. I harken back to last year with Carlos Correa, another perfect example of a guy everyone got very excited about. I saw him go as early as number 5 overall in drafts to some very smart expert league owners. But the problem is, usually in the second year, what you're going to find is those counting stats like home runs, steals, they tend to be the same year over year, even the short sample size to the long one. And then what happens is basically they just get upticks in RBIs and upticks in runs scored based on the volume they get the next year. But to put this guy in that upper echelon when there's such a great amount of talent in this year's first round that is solid and dependable and has track record, I think is absolutely insane.
Do you feel the same way about Trevor Story then? Because he came on the scene, he's playing in Colorado. Obviously, we know that that's a very batter-friendly park. He got hurt, though, season-ending surgery on his thumb. But what do you think about him and his prospect for this year?
Well, Story is an interesting one because the problem with Story is it all depends on what format you're playing. If you're playing in a points league format, I mean, the fact that he had 130 strikeouts in less than half a season, that's a terrible negative against him. If you are playing in a season-long roto, you can take all the counting stats and take the hits when he's going to be away from Coors Field, and that's okay. But any sort of head-to-head format you're playing in, there's a lot of negatives. The splits were very, very wide. The Story has terrific power, especially for the position he plays. I think he's a good entity. That's another one, though. I want to see him make adjustments. We didn't get to see that in the second half of last year for the positive or for the negative. So for me, I think that's one you just want to be careful of. Don't reach, but certainly a guy still worth taking.
Who are some guys worth taking that maybe necessarily you don't want to reach on them, but maybe there's some terrific value? Maybe they had some bad years last season, some injury plague years, and maybe they're in for a bounce back season. Is there any guys you're looking to target come draft day?
Well, look, in terms of the Black Book, you know, I always try to go in there and find guys that are going to be good return on value investments. That's what I want to do. That's what the Black Book is all about. The trouble is, that's not that hard to find, and there's no such thing as sleepers anymore. That idea the internet killed long ago. So what you can do is look for guys that are undervalued, like a Mitch Haniger, who might have an everyday position ahead of him, who had some really good numbers last year in a short period of time, but is not going to have the kind of pressure on him or expectation or ADP. You also want to be careful of the guys that, you know, guys like Michael Brantley, who've had 3 shoulder surgeries in 1 calendar year, coming back and, you know, you're hoping for a 315-15 season out of a guy like that. But meanwhile, you can get that out of Odubel Herrera or someone like that, a lesser name. So you got to be careful more about the name value. You got to strip that away. You got to strip away all the stats and look at the percentage and value and how much more valuable a guy is than another. That's the secret to success in fantasy sports.
All right, well, I'm sure that anyone who is listening is definitely poised for success thanks to your great advice and insight, Joe. We got to get out of here, but we hope to talk to you again soon, okay?
Always a pleasure, guys. Talk soon.
Have a great week.
Joe.
All right. You're going to read the book?
Oh, absolutely. Head to Amazon and do yourself a favor and get this book. It's a terrific read all the time. And he's right. It's all about finding value.
Yeah.
That's how you win your drafts.
Do yourself a favor and stick around because we're going to do Chris's starting pitcher rankings coming up on FST. This is Fantasy Sports Today, and it is time to do some starting pitcher rankings with one, Chris Meany. We're going to take a look at his top 10 rankings. And, sir, your work has been impeccable thus far. Let's see if you can keep it up with your pitching staff as we take a look at your top 10. Clayton Kershaw leading the way. Max Scherzer.
Does this guy play for the LA Chargers or something? They changed their logo. Did you see that?
They did. They felt the pressure. They knew it was a terrible, terrible idea. They rushed, and they're going to regret this decision. Okay. Corey Kluber at 4. Chris Sale. Noah Syndergaard. John Lester, Johnny Cueto, David Price, and Jake Arrieta are rounding out your top 10. Let's start with Chris Sale, because the top four guys, I mean, they kind of speak for themselves. And Sale's interesting because via trade, he went from the White Sox to the Red Sox. And I want to know if you think that this is going to have a big impact on his performance.
Yeah, I don't think so. I really don't. What I noticed from Chris Sale over, you know, a couple years is that he's pitching to contact. The strikes per nine have gone down a little bit. That is a bit concerning. But the move from U.S. Cellular Field to Fenway, a lot of people will think that that's a bad move. But according to Home Run Park Factors, U.S. Cellular was the fourth best park for right-handed home runs. Fenway was the 11th best park. Again, so that's, you would think, okay, he's moving to Fenway inside that division. But the thing is like, it's that wall there in left field. It's that wall. It's a doubles haven. It happens, but it keeps home runs. It keeps the ball from leaving the park. Yeah. So there's still a lot to like about Chris Sale. He's pitching. You know, he's got a great defensive team behind him. Awesome defensive team behind him, especially in the outfield. That's an upgrade certainly, and he's got a better offense. So wins are so hard to
project.
Both things, yeah. And hard to say.
I know.
on a Monday, but for Chris Sale, don't worry about him at all. Again, the K per 9, 10, 11, 9. The walks per 9, always fantastic, always solid. But the contact rate was a little bit concerning to me. 76.9, one of the highest marks of his career, because it was 70 and 73 the previous 2 years. But again, he's going to be fine. He's a phenomenal pitcher.
3.34 ERA last season for Chris Sale. And Chris, I want to know, do you put any weight into the rest of the rotation surrounding these guys? Because you have David Price at 9. He's on the same team as Chris Sale. Maybe these aces feel less pressure to go out and just shut it down?
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
But for a guy, they have David Price.
Yeah.
Certainly that helps him. As you're right, you make a good point. I mean, he doesn't have to be just the guy. They have Price. They got an AL Cy Young winner in Porcello. Yeah. They got some pieces around him that he maybe less pressure, certainly, as opposed to David Price just going there last year and just being the guy and asked to be the guy. He's got some work. So I don't put up too much stock into that. I mean, at the start of the year, Price will go up against an ace. Maybe that's harder to get that win. And Price will go up, or Sale will go up against the second best pitcher in that series.
Sure.
Maybe that'll help you out, but that's really just like looking into it probably too much.
All right, sorry.
No. Don't be. It's a good question.
I'm just asking. Okay, so David Price, though, Toronto fans were absolutely devastated when he chose to go to the Boston Red Sox, and then by the end of the season, they were kind of chuckling a little bit because he didn't have the best year.
He didn't have the best year. The thing with Price, the innings are always going to be there. He's an innings eater. I mean, over 200 last year, over 220 and 248 the previous 2 years in that. The strikeout numbers, the walk numbers, all the same. Slight decrease in K per nine. It's just the biggest thing that I've noticed at Price when you look at his numbers. He threw the fastball 48% of the time last season, by far the lowest in his career, and 92.9 miles per hour on that fastball, and that decreased about 2 miles per hour. The hard hit rate was 34%, the eighth hardest in the league. 30 home runs that he allowed was a career high. So he's throwing the cutter a little bit more. It's almost like he's changing his game just a little bit because people are catching up to that fastball. And Price has a lot of innings, as I mentioned, over the past few years, a lot of deep postseason runs for him over the course of his career. So that is a little bit concerning. That's why I'm willing to just take a shot at another pitcher. Maybe it's John Lester, Johnny Cueto, pitching inside the National League, a little bit friendlier ballparks, going up against pitchers. One thing I look at with Johnny Cueto is Johnny Cueto doesn't give up those home runs. He gave up 15 home runs. The home run to fly ball percentage has always been below one for him because he pitches in such a terrific ballpark against some mediocre ball teams. He gets to see a hitter every, you know, few at-bats, every couple of innings. So three straight 200 plus innings from this guy, three straight seasons. The K per 9 is solid. The ground ball percentage is solid. So it just seems like a safer pitcher to me. I think David Price is still fine. He's just trending in a direction that I don't want him to be trending in.
NL over AL. Chris Sale over David Price. That's what Chris Meany says. Both John Lester and Johnny Cueto, 32 games they started last season with 19 and 18 wins respectively. Jake Arrieta,
Arrieta, you got it. And John Lester, and to John Lester's point, he's much like Cueto, Ashley, because innings pitched are just there. Yeah. Solid, great K per nines, and they both go deep into ballgames.
Arrieta?
Arrieta.
Arrieta?
Projection and predicting.
See you guys later.